Hello there, and welcome back if you're with us this morning, and welcome if you're joining us for the first time. So this session is going to start about location and maps. So this afternoon, if you're in the US, we got a first session up until the break. We're going to talk about location and maps, and then we're going to do quite a good deep dive about Silverlight performance and application performance for about an hour. And then we've got a session on Expression Blend, and then finally the Q&A where you can ask your questions of our extremely well-qualified team and us.
Yeah, so start feeding the questions in. So we've got quite a good few, but we can handle a few more. If you want to put the question, put the word expert at the front so we know that it isn't for us, if you know. and then we'll feed those through later.
Indeed. Okay, so let's start by talking about the location services and the Bing Maps control. So the Bing Maps control didn't make it into the beta release. Now with RTM, you've got the Bing Maps control, so now is the time to introduce you to it and show you some of the cool stuff you can do with that. And we're going to start by talking about location, which maps without a location is nothing. So let's start at least with that first side of things. So on the phone, we've got a few kind of cloud-based services that Microsoft have provided for you that make this sort of thing that used to be really quite difficult and everybody would reinvent their own solution for. They've now provided location as a cloud-based service. So you don't have to write all the low-level plumbing code to talk to a GPS device or the GPS intermediate driver as we used to have on Windows Mobile. You can simply subscribe to the service. There's an API baked into the Windows Phone tools that you can call to get location data. And there are different options with it, so you can make a choice as a developer as how accurate does my application really need to be. And obviously the different trade-offs of the accuracy have implications for how long it takes to get a fix and also how much battery power you're going to be using. The other thing about the location stuff is a consistent API across platforms as well. So we've got the same API as on desktop Windows as well. So with the location, obviously a phone has actually got a number of ways of figuring out where it is. So for the first thing, you can consider, obviously, every Windows phone has got a built-in GPS receiver, so we can get a fix using a GPS satellite. The problem with that, if you like, the trade-offs are here. You see, you get very high accuracy, but it uses quite a lot of, especially if you run it for a while, you're using a lot of battery power, and that's always something you have to be very cognizant of with mobile devices. It's not particularly quick, even with assisted GPS. It's particularly if you've moved a kind of long way away. It takes much longer to give you good data than. So if you're running the GPS, you know it might take up to a minute, depending on where you are, to really drill down and get yourself a good high accuracy fix. And it doesn't work indoors, of course. So it's immediately useless in that situation. So that's one source of location data that we've got. The next one that you can make use of is cell tower triangulation. So the phone is connected to a mobile network. It's connected to two or three different cell towers. And it can use this triangulation. So it sort of figures out by the signal strength to different cell towers, it can triangulate and figure out roughly where the phone is. Problem with that one, of course, is that it's not very accurate. I think accuracy out in the country, in a city where there's a lot of mobile phone sort of masts, it can be quite accurate to a few hundred meters. But out in the countryside, it might only be an accuracy of 2 kilometers or so. So not very accurate, but maybe suitable for some applications. It's a plus on the power, doesn't take much of the phone resources. It's quick. Yeah, like I said, wilderness accuracy not very good, or wilderness if you haven't got a you can't get a phone signal in the you've got no chance with that either. Wi-Fi triangulation is another one. If you've got the Wi-Fi on, there's a database of Wi-Fi receivers that's continuously updated, and it can use Wi-Fi triangulation as well. And that one's kind of in the middle there, sort of more accurate, less accurate than the others, kind of in the middle. So these three now. the thing is, actually, from you as a developer, you don't have to say specifically, I want to get one of these. But what you do say is, I want to have a high accuracy result, in which case it will try and switch on the GPS receiver. Or if it's low accuracy, it will just go straight for the cell tower things. And the way you do that is just simply subscribe to the location services API. So one API to get the location data, and all of this low-level stuff about how it actually figures out where you are is handled for you. So that makes it a lot easier.
So if a new technique comes along, your code doesn't have to change. It'll just fit into whatever the precision.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So this little code snippet is the sort of simplest way of considering how you use this. So you actually create an instance of a geo-coordinate watcher class. This is the class that encapsulates the location services. And in the constructor, you can say, okay, do I want high, which means GPS, or if you can say low, and it'll just go off and use the cell tower triangulation or whatever. The movement threshold, I've found, we've been building an app with this. The movement threshold is quite useful. If by default, that's zero. It means every time you get a position changed event firing, you get an event coming into your application, which actually can be a lot of noise as it's drilling in. So you might want to just change that threshold, which means that unless it moves by more than half a meter, then we're not interested. So you just reduce the kind of noisy events being raised. And then there's a couple of events you can subscribe to, position changed and status changed. And of course, the actual one line I've missed off that is crucially important, is watcher.start, to actually start gathering the okay. data. So that's it. So that, in a nutshell, is the simplest way that you can use the location services. Very simple.
So the 0.5 is in meters?
It is, yes. Yeah. Now, obviously, this has been the long-running problem with location-based applications. I'm sure we've all had people, you've all seen people wandering around with laptops and phones connected by USB cables, walking around the car park in the rain, trying to get a fix so they can test their GPS-based application. Location service does not work on the Windows Phone 7 emulator, so there's no emulated GPS. Can't use the Wi-Fi of your laptop. There's no emulated radio, so you don't even get the cell tower positioning. So none of those sources are available to you with your applications if you're testing on the emulator. However, there is a very interesting library which came out fairly recently, right across the board. This is not unique to Windows Phone, for desktop as well, called the Reactive Extensions for .NET. That has been used. It's too easy to fake incoming GPS data, and I'll show you the code in a minute, just to show you roughly how that works. And if you go to the Windows Phone developer website and go to the samples section, there is a sample there that shows you how to use the reactive extensions to fake GPS data. So in fact, I'm just going to show you the code now. This is the reactive location emulator sample from the website, so you can get this yourself. And just to walk you through the key things here, we've got the geo-coordinate watcher there. We've got some hard-coded array, in this case, for emulated status values. And scrolling down a bit more, some noisy stuff. And then here we get some more errors, more buttons here. Now, this is where it starts getting interesting. So this is where you start gathering location data. So here we are, we're going to say, if we're not using emulation, this is how you use the real location service. So create a geo-coordinate watcher with a geo-position accuracy of high. And then this is where the reactive extensions comes in. So what a reactive extension is a technique for subscribing to making an observable sequence of events. So you create a location, you use the observable from event, and in the from event of T there, you say, okay, what kind of arguments are coming from these events? And then you put the position, the actual event addition and subtraction in as parameters to that. So this is how you configure an observable sequence of a particular event. And you can do the same with the status changed event. So this is kind of interesting because you then use a link statement, having got your configured your observable collection. You can then use a link state, so a statement say, so from the events that have been captured in this observable sequence, you then select, and of course you've got all the normal link stuff to select where you can put where clauses, so you can filter the events coming through. And just below here is an example of exactly what you would do. So you can actually sample. There's a sample. Dot sample is a method of this as well. So this is at the result. This is the result of our link statement, and then you can sample it, which means you're only going to get an event from that at most every sample interval, which I believe is set to 1 second higher up. So again, this is another way of getting rid of noise. Now, the other thing that's nice about this is that actually you can obviously combine different events as well. So this is ideal for a mobile phone where you've got a lot of asynchronous influences on the environment. Things are happening at once, so you can build up these complicated link statements that says, well, I'm only interested in events that happen at most every second where something else is true. So a combination of different environmental factors. So it's an interesting new way of considering how you subscribe to events. And then how do you subscribe to the event? So once you've set up your observable collection and the sampling and other things to filter the collection, you then just subscribe to it. And you give a lambda to say, OK, when an event fires, what do I want to do with it? In this case, we go to the invoke position change thing. And here's the same thing with the status events as well. So it's a whole new way of actually subscribing to events. And then having set up our event hooking, we then start the geo-coordinate watcher. Now the nice thing about this is that here, this else is the, if we're not using the real device, then actually we just start up a thread and we start the background thread to start emulating events. So here we actually get, we create another observable collection just the same way. And you can actually subscribe to that. And from your application code's point of view, it's just as easy to subscribe to emulated events as it is to the real thing. So it gives you a level of abstraction from what's going on. So easiest way of looking at it is to run it in the emulator. So here's the UI. And see, it simply dumps the data to the screen, so yeah, of our events. Now, I could hit go and nothing would happen because we haven't got a real GPS, but that would work fine on a real device, and you would get, if you're outdoors, you get location data coming through from the location service, which would have been derived from the GPS on the device. But if I click this, this button is emulate here, so we can turn on the emulation, and then hit start, and this will start the sequence of events coming through. And you'll see the status is changing, and we're getting data coming through. This data, actually, in this application, is just random numbers that are generated. But in an application we built, you can one other interesting thing about this particular example application is that you can go outside and use the real location service and dump
capture a bunch of readings,
which it stores in a file in isolated storage, which then gives you the problem, how do I actually get it off the phone? And I found the way to do it simply, actually, is to have some startup logic that dumps it all to the debug output, and then you cut and paste it from your debug window, which is one way of doing it.
It's weird you said that, because that thing I built this morning, that's how I get stuff out of that. I just print it as I read it, and then just cut and paste.
Which is all right for relatively small amounts of data, but other than that, you might have to write a web service and actually transfer it that way, because it's remarkably hard to get stuff off the phone once it's stored there. So there you go. That's a quick look at the reactive extensions and how you can emulate location service data. So get this from the Windows Phone Developer website, and you can reuse this code in your own geomapping applications. So that's a quick look at location. I'm not going to say very much more about that. Let's look at the mapping side of things. So Bing Maps, the Bing Maps control is, like I said, is new in the RTM, and it's a lot of fun. There's a whole new lab in the developer training kit, which you can go and download now. And what I'm going to show you now is a small subset of the stuff you can build in there, just to illustrate what you can do with the Bing Maps control. The first thing to say is actually this is full parity with the Silverlight Bing Map control that you would use on the desktop and in the browser. So this isn't anything brand new or anything. All the stuff that you may have done with browser-based apps, Silverlight apps, works on this phone. It obviously has been optimized for Windows Phone, so we've got, like in the other controls that have been optimized for the phone system, we've got them, they are touch enabled, so we've got pinch and zoom in, pinch and stretch for zoom in and out, and good caching of tiles on the phone, so it is optimized for this environment. But in terms of the programming and the technique you the techniques you use to interact with it, no difference, just the same. And it's a very, very powerful control.
I'm good.
Okay, so now let's take a look at how we programmed the Silverlight Maps control. So this this demo is based on the lab that you can do yourselves in the developer training kit. There's a really, really good detailed lab in there which takes you through a lot of the detailed programming things you can do with the Silverlight Maps control. It's a really, really great great lab. So I'm going to show you some of the features that you can do now. So we've got a starter solution which has already got some bare bones functionality in there, and we're going to add the mapping capability into this application. So we've got essentially an empty page there. So the first thing I'm going to do is just in the toolbox go and find the Bing Maps control and just drag it onto the page here. So there's the map, drag it on, and it will actually, that doing that will add the reference you need, which is the microsoft.phone.controls.maps DLL you need to have in your references. So it's put a little default map on there. I'm just going to get rid of the fixed height that it's given it and the width. So now it will expand to fill the space, and I'm going to just change the name of that to map. So straight away we've got a map. So actually we can even run it at this stage and see what it looks like in the emulator. So there's the splash screen for the training kit. And you can see at the bottom we've got four buttons, none of which are hooked up to do anything at the moment. And the default map appears, which is just the centered on zero latitude, zero longitude, and the zoom level of one, which is the entire world. And I don't know if you'll be able to see that, but just overlaid on it, it's there's a white thing that's there that says invalid credentials, sign up for a developer account. So this is the first thing you have to do when you want to use the Silverlight Maps control. You need to have a developer account. Fortunately, for mobile, the keys are free, but you still need to go and actually register. So over here in Internet Explorer, I've got it open at www.bingmapsportal.com, which is where you get your developer keys from. So you need to sign in with a live ID. I'm just going to sign in with my own here. And there's a section here, create or view keys under the map APIs. And you put your name in here, the application name, and a URL.
So these are just they're just tags for the application. They don't actually mean anything in the program as far as Bing is concerned. Is that right?
That's right, yes, yeah. That's right. They're just kind of, you know, namespace declarations, if you like.
Yeah.
Different options for the application type. So we'll go mobile, and then you can hit click create key. And what will happen is it will stick it into the list. It's down at the bottom there. So I'm going to pull this one out. And then we're going to actually use that in our application in order to access the Bing Map services, because obviously this is all network bound, this control. We get map tiles from the Bing Map services. The searching and everything is all done through the Bing Maps services. A lot of that is handled for us by the control, but you need to give this key. So I'm going to we're going to build this using kind of some best principles. In our app.xaml, which is kind of where all the global stuff goes, I'm going to create in there storage for the key, because we're going to need this a few times. So I'm going to stick it in here. Oh, we're running, so it doesn't want us to make any changes. Okay, stop the app running. Internal const string, and we're going to call it ID equals, and paste in that key that we just got there. So that makes it accessible throughout the application. And then I want to the map control needs an object called a credentials provider object. So over in our the code behind for that page, I'm going to actually put in there add in here a field read-only credentials provider. And we need to fix up the namespace for that because it's not declared yet in here, using Microsoft.phone.controls.maps. So we've got a property. This is a private field. And the value of that is going to be a new application ID credentials provider. And the value, there's two versions of the constructor for that, and the second one of that takes the application ID, which we just stuck into the application object as a global there. So that creates the local field, and I'm just going to right-click on that and use the refactor tools to create a property, so I'm going to encapsulate that field. So that makes a public property, which here, credentials provider, which now we can use Silverlight data binding to make use of that in the XAML. So switching over to the XAML. Oh, well, one thing I want to explain about the data binding. Well, let's do the XAML first, then I'll explain how the data binding works in this particular sample. So here's our map control. And the credentials provider attribute is equal to, and then we're going to actually use data binding to bind to that property. So it's binding, and the property was called credentials provider. And that's a public property. Well, it won't find that if I spell it wrong. Get that bit right. There we go, credentials provider. So now that's going to go and look in the data context for this page. It's going to look in whatever the data context is to go and find a public property called credentials provider, which is where it's going to get that that string ID from.
So if you make a second application, same procedure, just put a different key in that you get from the Bing Maps website. Is that right?
That would be right. Yes. Yeah. You're only allowed three keys per live ID, so you're a little bit rationed in that okay. sense. But of course, you can create new live IDs. So.
Of course, you can. Yeah. Not that we would.
No, of course not. Now the data context. So where is it going to find this credentials provider? So normally you'd see data context up here, or data context in the root element, which is a canvas in this case. But in actual fact, there's one oddity, if you like, about the way that this main page is set up in this particular lab. And if you look in Solution Explorer on the right there, there's obviously we've got mainpage.xaml, and there's the code behind file as normal, mainpage.xaml.cs. So that's what you'd expect. But there's also a mainpage.cs, which you don't normally see. And that's all that is. It's a partial class, so it's still part of the main page class. But all that they've done in this lab is, in here is kind of all the kind of plumbing,
twiddly bits,
boring stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So the idea is just so that when you do this lab, you don't get distracted by all this stuff, and you can just focus on the real coding of the map control. So you're going to be working in mainpage.xaml.cs, but they provided some of the boring stuff. And some of the boring stuff in there, if we look at the constructor, you'll see here at the bottom, that's where it sets the data context property of main page to actually point at itself. So it's saying, for all your binding statements, just look for public properties in this class, in the main page class. So that's how that we've just
that's
put
how
in
it knows
there.
To look there.
Indeed, that's where it's going to find that credentials provider. Okay, so we can run it again, and this time we should find that we won't get that thing up on the. It will accept that credentials. And we'll get a map. And
so it goes online and authenticates that. At the point at which it sees that, it goes, OK, let's go and check this is all right. And comes
and out of the box now, you can see how little programming, but okay. I can double-click on this. And immediately, we've already got the zoom in, and it's going off, and it's picking, and it's zooming in, and then every so often it will be, and we can pan it, and go over to the UK, and zoom in. And so it's going off and fetching tiles from the service and building it up in the way that it just the same. This control is, it's the same control that you use for desktop and browser, Silverlight. So, but with some modifications for mobile use. And see, that's actually where I live, on the edge of the Snowdonia National Park in North Wales. So great functionality we've got for free. Like I say, you can pan it, and obviously you'd be using your finger rather than a mouse, but this being the emulator, and double tap to zoom in. Mm-hmm. And actually, you've also got, with this map, it's touch-enabled, so we've got pinch and stretch. So as long as the is-enabled property is true on the control, you've got all this functionality, the user interaction is all built in, you get for nothing. So that's pretty cool. Now, the next thing I'm going to do, this right-hand button here, is the mode. So at the moment, what we've got is what's called road mode. So you can zoom in, and actually, when we get a bit more focus, you're going to see that that's the A55, which is the main trunk road across the north coast of Wales. Oh, actually, Llanfairpwllgwyngyll, that's just my village. So
I'll be turning up.
I went in there, like, zoomed in there.
You shouldn't tell people where you live, you know. I'll be around there asking for free drinks.
Yes, very nice. Okay, so what we're going to do is this button at the moment, you can click it and nothing happens. But what we're going to do is, when you click that, we're going to switch between road mode and aerial mode. So let's quit out and let's just do that very simply. So by default, as I say, we're in road mode. So I'm going to actually change the default for this guy to be aerial mode instead. So I'm just going to open up this element. And it's we're going to set the mode property of this map. So mymap.mode. And this takes an object. It's actually it's a weird property that actually takes an object. So embedded inside this, we need to give it an object. And what we're going to do is instantiate a aerial mode object. And actually, that has a number of properties on it, which you can set. And one of them is there's a couple of show display fading labels. I don't actually know what that one does. I'm just trying that. Show display should display labels equals true. So we're going to have the aerial mode, but it's actually going to be overlaid with little labels to point out what bits are on that. So that becomes the default mode, and immediately, as you can see there, in the designer, it's switched over, and we've actually now, it's already, even in the designer, you're getting the aerial mode shown on there. But what we want to do is enable that button in the app bar, which is not shown up in the designer here in Visual Studio, but is there, believe me. The buttons are actually defined in the XAML down at the bottom. I'm just going to collapse this stuff here. So we've got four buttons, as you saw when it was running: origin, route, directions, and mode. And we're going to enable this mode button. Now, one thing when you're doing this lab, normally if you want to go to an event handler, you'd say navigate to event handler. That doesn't work with this lab because it goes off looking for the event handler in the mainpage.xaml.cs.
It's the wrong place.
Where in actual fact, it's already been implemented
somewhere else
in that other file, that weird file that I told you about, where all the plumbing code is. So event handlers are in here, and the button, let's find it, button mode click actually calls a method called change map mode. We can go to where that is defined, and actually that is defined back in mainpage.xaml.cs, and here it is, and there's a to-do there. We just need some simple logic here to say if the map.mode is currently, oh, get rid of that, is currently an aerial mode, then we need to switch it to be a new road mode object.
And that's going to make another lump of data which explains to the map how the roads are displayed. Is that right?
It changes. You'll see in a minute. It just completely changes the appearance of it. So it's quite dramatic in its effect. And this one, we need to, if it's currently a road mode, we want to change it to an aerial mode. Yeah. And this has, again, there's the bool labels version. So we're going to say, yeah, we want to have labels as well. So that should enable that. Now we can run it, and that will be with us, hopefully.
So I could make objects that contain my preferences for these modes and just drop those in, I guess, couldn't I, if I wanted to?
Well, no, this particular mode property, those are the only choices, is aerial mode. They're part of the functionality of the map.
Oh, okay.
So now we're in aerial mode, and I can click this button, and it will switch to the road mode. So switch it back. So that gives, for virtually no code, a real good user control over the rendering of the map. So that's good. So we're doing good on that. The next thing I want to do is, as you've seen, we have got the ability to double click, and as I said, on a real device you can pinch and stretch to handle zooming in and out. Now, if I'm sure most of you are familiar with using the Bing Maps on the web. So you'll be aware that Bing Maps and other map providers on the web, they tend to have the same kind of thing for the scale, the zooming in and out, and like a little pan control. And in actual fact, this, like I said, is the same control that you use in web pages. So you can, there is a property on this control which is set to false by default, which is to show the zoom bar. There's a zoom bar visibility property. But And so you can show the traditional Bing Maps zoom bar, but actually there's no point in doing that because that particular control is built into it, is optimized for a use by a mouse, which obviously most people use in a browser, unless you've got a touch-sensitive laptop. You're going to be using a mouse, and it's fine for that, but it doesn't work on a phone because the click area is not big enough. So we need to provide a touch-enabled solution for that. So let's do that as the next thing. Add some zoom control to this. So we're going to do this properly. So I'm going to, first of all, we're going to create ourselves. You see, we've already got a public property in this particular thing, but at the moment the getters and setters don't do anything. So we're going to create the backing field for this, and it's a double. Call it underscore zoom. So there's our backing field. We've got to limit this thing because we don't want to allow people to zoom in until you can see the top of Rob's head sitting in his deck chair in his front garden. We'd like to spare people that one. Yes.
Yes, fair enough.
So what we're going to do is actually put some limits on the zoom that we're allowing people. So we've got private const double, and we're going to set the default zoom level. And I always forget what the zoom level relates to. I'm sure somebody will tell me. But 18 is a good sort of street level, so you can see,
so you can get enough on the screen to see where the houses are and stuff.
That's right, yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. We're going to have the a minimum that we're going to allow, which is the min zoom level. And that will, oddly enough, we're going to limit to 1, which means
that's
the world,
so
you can't zoom out to see the universe or anything like that. I don't think Bing Maps quite offers that capability just yet. There'll
be
a spaceship going around soon, won't there, to take photographs of your planet without your permission.
Mapping Uranus. That could go wrong in so many ways. Do move on.
Thank you. To anyone.
Uranus, sorry.
Yes, please.
All right,
moving on. Yes. Let's implement this property, and then we're going to bind our control to it in a moment. So anybody who wants to get, we want to return the value of the backing field, which is underscore zoom. Okay, and then the setter, we want to put a bit of logic on here to, what this setter is, there's two ways of setting this. So we want to be able to, we've got the buttons that we're going to put on the map in a minute. And then when you click the buttons, we want to actually manipulate this zoom property, and then we're going to bind the actual zoom level of the map control to this property. So we want to make sure that whoever sets it can't exceed the limit, so we need to put a bit of logic in here.
Yeah, so we're going to set the thing, and then we're going to fire the events to make everything kick off from a change to this property.
So we're going to have a variable called coerced zoom, and that's going to, is what we want is to take math, which we have to fix up the reference to that. Just using system. Math dot the minimum of, and obviously the lowest we can allow the zoom level to go to is the min zoom level. And then the highest is the minimum of the max zoom level, which is the limit we're imposing, and the value that's being passed in.
Yeah,
there we go. So that gives us the value that we're going to allow.
So at this point,
losing a bracket,
the value is going to be right.
So now we've got one that's in range, yes. And then we do our usual stuff. Let's get this up a bit. If that results in the zoom level actually changing, so if underscore zoom, which is the current value of that property, does not equal coerced zoom, the value that we've just established, then we can set it, and it's equal to coerced zoom, and we also need to tell the binding Silverlight binding system that has changed. So that's the tradition, the standard notify property changed. Get the name of the property. All right, so there we go. That is the plumbing, if you like, for that property. Now we can go off to the map control and actually bind that to it. So we're back at the top here. Where's our map gone? There he is. Let's just shrink that over a bit. We don't need to see that.
So once we've done this binding in the XAML, that's it.
Yeah, it will. That's right.
It's astonishing. This data binding is like magic, only better.
Data binding is a wonderful thing because it does separate the actual the presentation, the UI that the user is looking at it, away from your application logic. So you shouldn't really. Okay, the stuff we actually just did by setting the map mode in code. It's kind of we don't really like that sort of thing, but because that's an object rather than just a simple property, it makes it easier to do in code. So that's the kind of exception that proves the rule. But we're going to need to bind this to binding. We're going to bind that to the zoom property, of course, which is the property we've just created, and we want to make this a two-way binding because the user can interact with the map and pinch, all this kind of stuff. So that will change the zoom level, and so we also, in a minute, we're going to add some buttons, which will allow them to interact with it in a different way through the buttons. But then the click handlers are back in the class, so we've got a lot. It all just hangs together. It's all wonderful stuff.
So this will reflect how far they can pinch in because of the fact we put that limit on the value it's feeding into the system.
Yep. So the buttons, I've actually got them away down here, so I'm just going to drag the XAML in for that, so you don't have to watch me type it. There we go. Okay, the alignment's not fantastic. Let's tidy things up, because we're a tidy person here. So two buttons, and as you can see, they've actually got some custom styling applied to these buttons, so a nice round outline instead of the usual square one. And that's because we've got some styles defined, button zoom in style and button zoom out style, which have already been created for you. They're actually off in the resources styles. We've got a style dictionary in this file, default style.xaml, which we will be coming back to later. So that's how the button thing comes in. And these event handlers for button zoom in click and button zoom out click are already defined in that plumbing file. There's button zoom in click, which just adds one to the zoom property. Remember, this partial class of the main page class, so we're adding one to the zoom property, which it will do until it gets to max zoom level and then no further. And then this one is, again, just dropped it by one until we get to the min zoom level, which is one. So that should be it as far as allowing that zoom stuff to work. So
we have a nice example of how data binding works as well as how the zoom thing does its stuff.
That's right.
It's quite cute.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So let's try this this button here. We click on the plus button and nothing whatsoever happens. Rob, why is it not working? Oh, it is working now. He says. Yeah, okay. So it's just a bit of lag there because we're obviously on the network to get this thing. Okay.
There it goes. Yep.
Yep. There we go. We get there. So that's the. We got some zoom in and out. I mean, that point here. I mean, I'm working on this control on a laptop that's connected to a moderately fast network. Yeah. Seems to be a bit bumpy today. Just remember when you're using this control that very rich and powerful though it is, that the user experience on a phone that is connected to a slow network is not going to be good, frankly. So if you're on Wi-Fi, or obviously you're tethered to a PC, obviously most of the time it's good performance. You're going to get good performance. And also if you're on a 3G or 3.5G or 4G sort of about to come in, if you're on a fast phone network, again, you're going to get a decent user experience because these tiles, all this rich visual data, of course, is being fetched from the server. I mean, it does do some caching internally, of course, so that it doesn't do unnecessary round trips. But this is a network-bound control, so just think of that when you're programming applications that are using this, and not expect an instant response from your user interaction with this. All right. Now, what I'm going to do now, I should have shown before I closed it, but the left-hand button was this go to my origin, which is go to my current location button. So, and it will zoom into the default zoom level, so it will move you straight to, it's the kind of instant, go to where I am button. So, again, this is another thing that's very easy to implement. So, now, I showed you earlier in this talk before we got to the maps control, I showed you about the location services and how you can use the location service, how we can fake the location service on an emulator, and how obviously you program against the location service for a real device using GPS or whatever. Now, in this application, we could hook it up to all of that stuff, but we're just going to actually we're going to hard code our location, yep. A fixed location. So to do that, I want to put I'm going to add a new static to our code behind class up at the top here. So we're going to have ourselves a private field, static, read only. And this is a geo-coordinate, which is the object that stores lat-longs. Clearly, I need to add another namespace to that. IntelliSense didn't pick that up straight away. Oh. Ah, okay. Now, in fact, what I was expecting was it to come up with system.device there, because it's not actually in. If you're going to use location services and get all these classes for geo-coordinate, we need to add another reference to our app, which is the...
device is namespace, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the system.device, because that's got all the location stuff, and it's got all the kind of phony hardware-y stuff. Here we go. System.device.
So it's the same place. I think it's accelerometer lives there, too.
Yep, they're kind of all the hardware-y stuff. And now IntelliSense knows that geo-coordinate exists in the system.device.location namespace, so we can add that in. And then we're going to set up a field on here, which is our default location. And that, of course, is equal to a new geo-coordinate and four versions of the constructor. But the one we want is this double latitude, double longitude. So I don't know. We need a random lat long. So Rob, could you give me a random lat long, please?
93.72.
What was that? 53.777719, I think you said, wasn't it?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
That's
sorry.
Right. Longitude, so what do you think for that?
48.29.
Minus 1.572016. That's what you said, wasn't it?
Yes, that was.
That was it, yeah.
I'm better at rehearsal, but there you go.
So we got a default, entirely random location.
Who would have thought that? I would have said
no
those
idea.
Numbers.
No idea. Straight from Rob's brain. and then, now what we're going to do now is we'll center the map on this location. So in order to do that, we need another field in here.
So the user will click on the button, and this will then take us to that magical, mystical place.
Yeah, and it will be two-way binding as well. So if the user moves the map, pans the map around, the center in the background, in the class, again, we're using data binding to link the map control to our code behind here.
Okay.
So it's a geo-coordinate, and the backing is center. And, again, I'm going to just use the wonders of the refactoring tools to build me a property for that called center. And we just expose that. Again, the only thing we need to do is fix up the setter so for that to work with data binding. We actually first of all say if the value that's being passed in is different from what we already have, if center does not equal value, then we set it, and we also need to call notify property change to tell the binding system that this particular property has changed.
That will force a redraw and everything else.
Indeed, yeah. Yes. Okay, and then we need to actually do the binding in the map.
So do we need a getter as well for this, or is it just going to return?
It's there.
Oh, okay. So it'll get that from our default value as well, won't it? Yeah. Okay.
Good thinking. I haven't actually set that yet, so I'm going to need to hook that up so we start up at the right place. Yeah. But we need to. Let's just hook. Let's do the data binding zoom level. Is that zoom bar visibility I was talking about? Property does exist, but don't set it to true because you'll get one. So with zoom level, we're going to use binding again, and we're going to bind it to the zoom property in our data context.
Is it zoom level? Isn't it location we want rather than zoom level, or am I
center? I've already done that. So right, it's underlined. I'm glad somebody's awake. center.
Yeah, we're now telling the map where we are. That's right, isn't it? Yes, so we're centering it about the place. Yeah, okay.
I'm glad you're awake.
This magical, mystical place of which some have spoken.
And we're going to bind that to our center property, and we're going to set the binding mode again to be
two-way.
Yeah, now, okay, as you say, the last bit of the thing is actually to enable this button. So the app bar button you can't see on here, but the app bar button itself is, it calls the, I'll find it again, the origin button, it's calling the button location click, which is off in this plumbing class again. Button location click. Just going to find this guy. There he is, and that does some visual state stuff, which is which changes some of the presentation on the eye. And then it goes to the center location method to actually do the magic. And this is where we want to set the location to center is equal to this default location that you dreamt up. Mm-hmm. And we're also at the same time going to set the zoom level to be equal to the what do we call it? The default zoom level. So it's going to zoom into the default zoom level and center on the map. So now we've got the center there. We've got it binding to the center property in our backing field. And we set mode equals two-way binding. So let's give that a go. Up we come. And in a minute, and then we're going to hit the origin button on the left here, which we've now hooked up, and the mystery location will be revealed. Zooming into there we go. Purely by random, amazingly, it's ended up on Leeds United Football Club, which
who would have thought? All the places on the surface of the earth.
Yeah, amazing that. And funnily enough, I'm a supporter. I've been a supporter since I was, you know. That high. Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, I've been through
3 weeks ago. No, I won't say that. I've
been through joy and mostly pain.
Yes, it is a lot of a football support in the UK.
It is. Yes.
It leads.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So there we go. So now we can zoom in on our faked location, which is actually set to my team in the UK. So there we go. All right. Now this map, obviously. With maps, what you want is push pins, okay? So the next thing we're going to do is just do a little bit of stuff with push pins. You can place objects, so you can have this kind of layers of stuff with the map control. And what we're going to do is put another layer on this map control where we can position our push pins. So the map layer is what you use for doing that. And there's a special kind of map layer, which is a map items control, which allows us to sort of use data binding to collections. So you can have a collection of push pins.
So if I'm doing a sales app to track people around a particular sales route, or route, as the Americans would say, then I can actually put a layer in with some push pins that they can then actually state where they want to go to, kind of stuff.
That's the kind of thing, yeah. Or, in fact, in this lab, what you get to do is you can actually tap with your finger and a little context menu comes up and you can select to add a new push pin to the map.
Oh, okay.
So you can do that kind of thing as well.
So we can gather
infinitely variable.
As well.
Infinitely variable what you can do with it. So I'm going to add this new layer to this, which is a map items control. There we go. And let's just close that out. So this is where we're going to put our new push pins. And I'm going to actually make a data object to represent a push pin. Let's add a new folder to this. Add new folder, which is model. So I'm going to create myself a backing class for this. And in that in there, I want to create myself a push pin. So I'm going to add a class to it. So this is a class to hold the data for a push pin, the location of it. Push pin.
Could we put our own custom stuff in there to handle other information about.
This is entirely under your control, yeah.
So if I wanted to have phone numbers, addresses.
Yep, absolutely. It's just a data class, so anything that relates to your push pin And you could have a hierarchy of classes. So this could be a base class that just stores the location, and then you might want to have a, like a customer push pin or a whatever push pin.
Because you can get these video game, these games where you run around the geocaching type games. You could actually use that to build a geocache game really easily. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
And the only property I'm going to put in this to start with is a geo coordinate, which I need to add the using statement in here, using system.device.location, and the property is going to be the location. And they are just going to do an automatic property there, so we're going to have add the getters and setters automatically like that. And then we want to have a collection of these guys in our main page. So this is our model. It represents a data object. And over here, let's stick it under here. I'm going to put in a new backing field, which is a private. Observable collection, which is the special collection type which that data bind, Silverlight data binding particularly likes. Yeah.
It's another piece of very strong magic, this, because basically things in here, when they change, can be made to appear on the form and vice versa.
Yep, indeed.
Really so impressive stuff.
Again, we're going to use data binding, and that's in system collections to object model. So we're going to have a collection of these guys and push pins. And that's going to be equal to a new observable collection of pushpin model. And actually, I'm going to initialize this collection with a single pushpin, the pushpin model that the class we just created. And the I'm going to set the location property to be equal to our default location again, the Leeds United Football Club.
This is a pin at Leeds. Yeah, okay.
Yep. So have we got all the syntax of that right? That looks like that wants a semicolon. So that's created a backing field. Usual stuff. I can just right click on that, refactor, encapsulate that in a property called push pins. So now we've got, this is our public property we can use for data binding. In fact, we don't need a setter on that, because we're just going to collect, we're going to get the collection. Yeah, we don't want to allow anybody to create a new collection.
That would break our map, wouldn't it? It would put something else in there. Yeah.
So, in actual fact, really, if we're going to be truly pedantic about that, we'll make that a read-only collection. So there we go. Yeah. And then, in our map items control, we can bind to this new collection, which has only got a single pin in it at the minute, but when you do the lab, we expand this to have loads of pins. So you'll be able to do that in your own time. So here's our map items control. We're going to bind the items property. We need to items source is what I meant to. Is equal to. Come on, talk to me.
It's interesting because I think programmers are becoming plumbers. So that you're actually sort of making a UI and then putting in these bits and pieces to link it to your data.
That's an absolutely wonderful way of thinking of it, because if you're writing well-structured code, in terms of how your UI, the bit that the user experience engineer, probably somebody who may be quite comfortable with Blend and things is doing, all this kind of stuff, they shouldn't have to worry about the logic, the data, and whether it's Leeds United or whatever. So it is about plumbing. Silverlight data binding is about plumbing.
You just define channels and then link them up.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So if we run this now, actually what will happen is you'll just see a bit of text overlaid on the map, because what we haven't done is told it, okay, we've given it this collection of pushpin model objects, but it doesn't know what to do, how to represent that on the map. So I'm going to, in order to allow that to actually make some sense of that data, I'm going to create a data template to tell it how. I'm going to create a item template.
This is going to bind to some XAML that will tell the map control how to draw a pushpin, is that right?
That's exactly right, yes.
Okay, so again, if you want to make your own custom pushpins, then you can just make your own XAML and push it in here.
Yeah, so I'm going to use my colon pushpin. So a pushpin is a native object in the Bing Maps namespace. And we need to set the location, of course. Property is equal to, and we're going to bind that to the, and this is a template that's going to apply to every item in the collection. So if you remember, the pushpin model has got a single property called location. Yeah. And we're going to set the content, which is the text that's shown on the control. Well, it could be anything. It's going to be text by default, just to my location. And then we can close this guy off, and all the squiggles should go away. He says, all the squiggles should go away. what's wrong with that, Rob?
It's got squiggles on it.
Yes, it's because I haven't put a data template around it. It's right.
Yes, yeah, I was going to say that, actually. But you beat me to it.
Yeah, so we just drag that over here, and life will be wonderful. There we go. So that should, if let's, we should have now, not only that, we've got a pushpin. Hang on, have I, yes, now that should be done, it should be good.
Something's flashing, always a good sign.
Yep.
Of course,
so
we have to
we've got, well, there is a, you can't see it, but if I,
if I
zoom in to Leeds United, there is a pushpin, there we go, with the text, my location. Okay. So that was pretty simple. What we want to do now, though, and, that is the default rendering for a pushpin, that's great, but of course the big question, everybody wants custom pushpins, and actually if you go and search on your favourite search engine, as I was a few weeks ago, looking into this for an app we were writing, there's all sorts of advice on there, most of which is wrong, as is usual. So
it is the internet, after all.
Let me show you the right way of doing it, customising pushpins. So the first thing we need, I'm going to do, we're going to apply a custom star to this. The good thing about the pushpin is it is a regular content control. It's a regular Silverlight control, which means you can customise the hind quarters of it, yeah. You know, just the same as any other one. So we're going to apply a custom style to it. And all our styles, we've got a style dictionary in here, which is, contains loads of styly sort of XAML. Now we're going to be, because we're going to create a template for the for a pushpin, it's going to be applying to a pushpin, we need to declare the namespace so that it will know what a pushpin is. And if we scroll down the list here, we should be fine. Microsoft.phonecontrols.maps. There we go. Have I got that one right? Yeah, I think so. And so inside this style, we're going to put our new style for the custom pushpin. Drop that in there. And there is, this is a pushpin style. You'll be pleased to see I'm not typing all this in by scratch. So this is the kind of thing that would have been designed in Blend. Mm. And actually, in fact, all this scary looking stuff in here is standard XAML. There's a path there, which is basically, you know, drawing a point, a line of lots of points. So a good way of representing graphical data. And more, another path, and all sorts of transforms. And then there's a content presenter for showing the text inside it. So there's our style. All we need to do then, and this is called, as you can see at the top, it's called pushpin style. Key into the dictionary is pushpin style. And the target type that this is to be applied to is a pushpin. So to use that in our design, we go and find our pushpin, and then we just simply say style equals squarely brackets. Static resource, because that's going to go and look in our resource dictionary, and then you give the name into the key that is the dictionary key, which was our pushpin style.
That's it.
And that's it, yes. That's how hard it is to customise a pushpin, he says. You watch it not come up now.
Oh, it'll work.
Oh, it'll work,
I have
yes.
faith.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. There we go.
Sweet.
Now,
round one.
As you see, it's still got the text. It's got a black band. It's still got the text, my content. And, of course, that's been, you can't see it at all. So one final little nice thing is I'm going to embed a little image inside our custom pushpin, an icon URI. So that'll be the final.
Coup de grace.
Indeed, indeed. And to do that, I'm going to actually, we've already got in this app a bunch of different graphics here. Pushpin, bicycle, car, drink, and if you do this lab, you can actually. This, I was saying before, you can actually tap on it and create lots of nice.
I think bicycle, car, and drink are all separate things.
They are, yes, absolutely.
I think that bicycle, car, drink could be an interesting device.
Fuel and house, restaurant and shop and location. We're going to use pushpin location. So our pushpin model class, which is represents the is the, our data class that represents a pushpin, currently only has the location property, and we're going to add another one, which is the URI to an image. So. Which is, we're going to call that property icon, and again, just have automatic getters and setters generated for us by the compiler. And then we need to go off and set the we need to bind the XAML to that, so it gets instead of the content on the push pin. So here's our push pin. Drag that over a bit. There's the star location. There's the content property, which currently is text. But actually, what we're going to do is replace that, the content. I'm going to close that altogether, actually. What we're going to do is stick inside of it an image. And that is going to get the image. The source is going to look for the source, and we're going to go and get that from our pushpin model that we've just added, that property.
So if I was tracking my chums on some networking application, I could have their pictures popping up.
You could do that
on each of these positions as well.
Yeah. Okay. Then we need to close that, and then all we need to do is on the back in our thing where we actually create the instance. Here's where we create that. We need to go and say which picture it is exactly.
Yeah.
So the icon, is the property. And that's going to be a new URI object, and the string to the URI string, we're actually going to go off. What we want to do is point it at this pushpin location here. So the path to that is slash resources, not a question mark, it won't like that, slash resources slash pushpins. And it's the one we want to use is push pin location dot png. Close that, and that is of course a URI kind of relative. And that should be all we need to do. So now, instead of my content, our push pin should have a picture in it instead. Well, it's got a nice black picture, which isn't quite what I had in mind, but the content has gone. Resources, push pins. Okay, well, we got rid of the content.
It's not meant to be black. It's a typo on the image path, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right.
That kind of thing.
I'm not even going to bother fixing that, because the next thing, the last thing we're going to do with this, so we've been through this, we've actually got our map control, we've got zoom in and out, we've got set the location, and we now have got customized push pins on it. The next thing I want to do, I'm just going to switch to a different solution, which actually takes the lab a little bit further forward. So this is the same lab, and you can run through and do all these steps yourself. So this particular one, we're going to add to it the ability to use the Bing Maps web services. So the control you've seen so far has got all that built-in functionality to handle the tiles, and that's very good. But there's more to the whole Bing Maps thing than just what's in the control. There's all these good web services. So all the kind of turn-by-turn navigation stuff that you'd expect from a navigation app, to put in a start and end location, and then go off to the web services and get a route and things. And we can do all that fairly easily. So I'm going to add some service references to this so we can access the Bing Maps web service. And the first one, in fact, there's the guys. So the first one is the geocode service. And it's going to go off on the internet, interrogate that service, download the proxy information, and in a minute, assuming that when we get that back, I'm going to change the namespace while it generates the proxy for us.
These are things you can just use. There's no, I mean, it's going to authenticate using the Bing key we've already set up, is that correct?
We will need to pass that in. You're absolutely right. All these need to be, you do need to pass that Bing key. We have to actually pass that in the calls. So I'll show you just how to do that. So bing.geocode is the namespace we're going to use, and now we're going to let the add service reference generate us a proxy class for making calls to that service. So that's a geocoding service. That's add service reference completed. So let's add another one. And the next one is the routing or routing service, as we say over in the UK. That will go off. That's another one. This is the one where you can give it a start lat long and a finish lat long, and it will calculate the route for you.
Okay.
So that one I'm going to put in the generated code. Will go in the bing.root namespace. And there's one more as well, which is the search one, which allows you to enter a string, like an address, and it will go and look it up and will return back to you
the actual... nearby.
Well, actually, no, not that one. It will actually return you that lat long, so it kind of matches, tries to figure out, by human typing in a string or a zip code or something like that, it turns it into a real location. So that's also very useful. And that one is also in that. This is the search service. And that one we're going to have as bing.search. Okay, so that's generating that one, add surface reference. Now one of the things it's done while it's created those is it generates for you a file here called servicereferences.clientconfig, which has got the WCF configuration stuff for talking to these, because these are WCF services. But what it does isn't here, because these services are general purpose, they're not just for phone, of course, is that it generates some bindings that are not compatible with Windows Phone classes. So what you need to just go in here is, and the basic HTTP bindings that you see here, these are all great. We can talk with those. That's what Windows Phone supports. But these custom bindings using this binary message coding, they don't work. So we just need to get rid of that.
Otherwise it won't build, is that right? Or it'll do weird things.
It confuses life, yes, that's right. So these are basic HTTP. So get rid of the endpoints that are the custom binding ones. Get rid of that one and get rid of that one. And we're left with three basic HTTP binding. So that's good. We're good to go now. Now then, there is somewhere. Let's find this guy. Let's just do a quick build. Succeeded. So we're in good shape so far. Off in our code behind, there is a method in here called calculate route, calculate route, which is empty at the moment. So we want to, we're going to put some code in here. We're going to start putting this solution together. Let's put a try-catch first of all.
Always a good starting point, a try-catch.
Anything that works over the network, you can guarantee.
You need to put it in, otherwise bad things will happen and your program will fall over.
That's right.
And at least you can say, I'm sorry I'm falling over, if you have a try-catch.
Yeah. And the reason why the alignment's gone weird there is because that was a round one, not a square one. And what we're just gonna for our purposes, we're just gonna actually dump it up on the screen, okay? X.message. So that if it goes wrong, we know this is obviously not what you want to do in your production code, but okay, so and then in here we're gonna put some stuff. Now we've already in this lab, they provide you with some classes for making the calls to these web services. So you can use these and look at them and learn them, but we're not going to make you sort of code this from scratch. But there is a method in there. There is a class in there called a route calculator. So in our logic here, we're going to create an instance of an object. And it's a route calculator, which is not in here, so the namespace for that is in using bing maps.helpers, which is a class I've added already, and here's our route calculator, and this is the class, so you can study this, and there's all the necessary calls to make the calls out to the web services, to do all the calling the search one, and everything you need to do to interact with it. All the hard work. So yeah, this is a model for how you would do this, use this in your own applications.
Well worth borrowing.
Absolutely. So the route calculator has a lot of properties, the first of which is the credentials provider. And remember, we created that a short while ago.
It's going to ask Bing Maps to do the work. It has to tell Bing Maps who it is before it can get involved.
Yeah. Indeed, yeah. So that's the property on that, which we've already got. It's credentials provider. That's why it's whinging. Yeah. Whinging is an English English phrase.
I was thinking about having an attachment for my glasses that made wavy red lines appear when bad things were about to happen to me. That would be kind of, kind of useful, like a visual compiler for life.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah. So it takes a to-string and a from-string. There's already a property in this class which is linked to a little pop-up panel,
yeah,
which I'll show you in a moment, where you can enter the string or the to and the from. And then the next parameter of this, it wants a dispatcher, because again, this background class has been cleverly written. Because this, yeah, the results are going to come back in on a background thread. So if you need to actually interact back with the UI thread, you need to use the system.windows.threading.dispatcher to do that. So we just pass the dispatcher from this class over to that background class so that it can make use of it. And then the last one is an action stroke action angle brackets T, which is a delegate that needs to be executed when we've got a successful response back from this thing. So this is code that won't be executed straight away, but it'll only be executed after all the asynchronous stuff has happened and we've actually got something back from the service. And I'm just going to leave that blank for now, and then we can close that off. So that's how we call the root calculator.
So it's that easy. I just give it to the two places and bang, everything else just happens as though by magic.
Well, in this particular implementation, yes. But like I said, a lot of the actual logic has been provided for you. So yeah, in this particular lab. Point. Yeah, we're going to hook the error event. It has an event on it. And we could create an event handler there just by hitting tab. But actually, I'm just going to use an anonymous delegate on this guy. So again, we'll just dump it out, messagebox.show, and a string, which is the reason. So again, we're getting some feedback if something goes horribly wrong with this. And then, so this creates an instance of this thing, and then to actually run it, this new object we just created, you call the calculate async method on it, which has been provided for you. So all that left now is, okay, what do we want to do when this succeeds? So we've got to fill in a little bit of code that's going to be executed in here. Now, there is also on this class, there's a property called roots, which is a collection. What happens when you call the Bing Maps root service? It brings you back a collection of roots. So it's, you know, you're going from this point to this point, or from this point to this point, or from this point to this point. So
right.
And it all builds up. It builds up to actually get you to your location. So the first thing we want to do is clear that collection. And then we want to plug in the new ones we've just been sent. So it's equal to a new root model. Let's see, root model, and the constructor for that takes a collection of location objects, which is actual, weirdly, is what we've managed to get back from the service, which is result.result. Yeah, I know. That's the variable should have been chosen a different name. Dot root path dot points, and the points, this has come back from the web service and is the right kind of object. They're location objects. So we create a new new collection of these, and then we add it into the property in this class, which is this root thing, roots.add, this root model. So that's plugging it into this class, and then the last thing is we want to center the map on the this collection of locations. So there's a very good method on the location rect class, which is if you give it there's a one called create location rect, which gives you a rectangle back, a location rectangle, based on a collection of coordinates.
So you can give it, basically gets the top and bottom and makes it
exactly
fit.
Exactly. Or you can give it a collection of push pins and it'll figure out how big
so
the map needs to be.
So if you've got like a sales area, rather than getting the whole of America, you just get the city which those pins are actually in. Oh, that's rather sweet.
It's very, very useful, yes.
And then, of course, they can zoom in and do what they like from there if they want, but it's a very good starting point. Yeah, clever stuff.
Yep. So we get our view rect and then we just simply map.setView. There we go, to the view rect that we've just been given. All right. So I think if everything's... We need to... one little last thing we need to do. We need to want to draw all these points onto the map. So let's go off and go to our view to the designer. Here's our map again. We've got our map items control with our pushpin collection in there. Wait, where's our map items control? Pushpin style. I just need to figure out where this needs to go exactly. There's the map items control. Well, there's the item template, so we need to create a data template on top of this. Map items control.
This is more plumbing, isn't it, basically?
That's right, yeah. That's right. Items source is equal to binding, and we're going to put that on the roots property. Then we need to put in there our template to actually show this map items control dot item template. So this is how we're going to show all these guys. And in there we have our data template to represent each item in the collection, and what we want to draw on there is a map polyline. So this is going to draw a line on the map.
Gets drawn. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
On top of the map, which is going to have all these points on it. So let's set a stroke thickness, stroke color.
Can it be red?
It could be red.
Oh, I like red.
There we go, it's red.
Thank you.
There you go. Opacity equals 0.85, so we can still...
See the map underneath.
Yeah, so that it's got a nice little see-through element about it. Make sure it's nice and... equals, let's say, 6. And then the actual locations of this polyline is going to bind that to the
points.
Locations, yes.
Yeah.
All right, close that up. Now then, the only other thing to save the typing... Something not quite right in that. Closing tag for element was not found. What's wrong with that, Rob? Maybe I'll just build it.
The closing tag thing is valid. Yeah.
Ah, good man. There's a voice from the back
of
the room.
I'm an expert in the room. Get round here.
Now, in the interests of expediency, there's a method in here where we go to initialize our defaults, and I'm going to, rather than type this in the emulator. So I'm going to set the zoom is equal to the default zoom level. I'm going to set the center to be default location. And I'm going to set the from field, which rather than type it in through the SIP, is, of course. So this is what the web service is going to look up and turn into a lat
so
long.
Bing will do that for us.
Bing will do that for us.
So you could put Andy's house in the second one and it would find your house?
Well, no.
Perhaps not, but your postcode, it would postcode followed by UK.
Absolutely.
And that gives you a route to the match every weekend.
Indeed, yes. So that was quite a lot of code. Hold on to your seats to see whether we... Oh, I'm trying to go to the device. I could show it on the device, but let's stick with the emulator. Let's see whether we've got that right. So here's our map coming up. The image has come up this time. We've got a nice blue image inside. We zoomed into the location. And then there's a panel. It's a slide-in panel that came in there. So there's our from field and our to field. So, invalid credentials. That's not going to work. Yeah.
We have to put those bits in too. Yes.
Yeah. So the I tell you what's I know what's going on here. So in here. The key, because this is the version that you will use.
Oh, we had a pre-cooked one which has got a placeholder for our key, so we have to put. You will do this as well. Get your key, paste it in there.
Yeah.
And as though by magic.
Indeed. So.
It'll all start working.
That's the goal. That's the hope.
The goal. Leeds United and goal in the same sentence.
Not often you hear that, yes.
This is right. Yeah. What are the chances?
So now we can hit the search button, and this is going to make the call off to the web services, and it should come back in a minute, and it's come up with... It's done the local... The rectangle thing has worked, but the line is sadly absent, but the... there's the Leeds, and there's Sheffield, so that bit of it worked. So... just to prove that, obviously it was a typo there, and I'm not going to bore you by going back, but let me just switch to, I happen to have a one here that I prepared earlier.
We'll but use this means one. That any application you've got that you think, oh, putting some location awareness in might be fun, the answer is it's not only fun, it's actually dead easy as well.
It's amazingly powerful, all this stuff, you know, the rich functionality. This lab, as you go on to do it, the other thing that this one can do, so let's just... let this chunter away. Let's go off and get the locations, and this time it's done it properly. We're going to blue, I'm afraid.
Maybe
not
it
red.
Was the red that did it.
Yeah. Shouldn't have.
I apologise for that. Yeah. Yes.
But you can go on. The other thing that the service brings back to you is actually turn-by-turn directions, which in this sim one isn't implemented. You've got a blank panel there. But do this lab, and you not only do you can add in the turn-by-turn directions as well. So you've got all the elements, really, of a turn-by-turn navigation
thing. I'm thinking pub crawl planner, but then again, maybe I shouldn't do that kind of thing. It gets all the nearest pubs and plans the best route to the bars.
Yep.
In fact, you could figure out where the cheapest beer is and things. Very clever stuff.
So that concludes the lab that I wanted to show you there. There's much, much more in it. It's a very detailed lab. So I advise you to go away and work through this yourself, and you will become an expert in using the Bing Maps Silverlight control. So that concludes this bit. Thanks very much for watching. Thank you.